I said, I'm so sorry I'm late. I was mugged. I would never be late for work. I'm so sorry I was late. And of course, we chased her down and then we took her to the police station. But I would never, you know, I would never be late for. He goes, come in here. He put me in his office, said, let me be real clear. This isn't a debutante party and you're not a debutante. We don't apologize in New York when we get mugged. He said, you okay? He said, you apologize too much. You look fine to me. Come in here and go back to work. And I, over the years, I'll never forget it because I think sometimes women, it's a habit, and they apologize too much.
Yep.
And after that, I thought, you're right. And I got mugged again. I didn't apologize.
All right. Do you like podcasts? I obviously like podcasts, and one that I like a lot is called The Distribution that Juniper Square puts on. It's hosted by my good friend, who's also been a guest on this podcast twice, Brandon Sedloff. Highly recommend checking out the episode they did with their CEO and co-founder, Alex Robinson. They talk a lot about the current state of the business and really just how they're looking at it going forward. They also did a good one with the CEO of BGO, Bentall Green Oak, Sonny Calso, which was fantastic. Juniper Square has meant a lot to Four Capital. We have been one of their earliest adopters. I think we were one of their first 10 customers. And really, if you think of how we run our business, it's synonymous with Juniper Square. We use them in every which way we can. They continue to come out with new products that our team devours and adopts. And we really aim at Ford as part of being the best operator in the world. A lot of that is how we deal with investors, how we raise capital, how we treat our investors, how we communicate with them. And a lot of that just happens through Juniper Square. So I've been talking about this company for 5 years on my podcast for a reason, and will continue to. It's just that good. One of the great joys of my life has been building Fort Capital, something that I have loved for a long time. One of the best parts about it is building it with our incredibly talented team across three offices, Fort Worth, Dallas, and Houston, and our team abroad. We've built an incredible enterprise focused around a mission of being the best real estate operator in the world. We really believe the better that we get at operating, the better that we get in investing. We've built some incredible technology that gives us the ability to see data that others can't and operate our company as efficiently as possible and deliver better customer service to our tenants and really everybody involved. If you want to know more about our thesis, I encourage you to go to our website, fortcapitallp.com, where we talk about why we've been investing in Class B industrial real estate since 2016, hyper-focused on it. You can learn how you can help us find deals, more about our technology and how we think about it. You can see job openings. Highly encourage you to check out our newsletter or follow us on LinkedIn. And you can do all of this by going to fortcapitallp.com.
All right, Elaine, thanks for joining me today.
You're so welcome.
I have spent all week researching you, and you're extremely fun to research. You have quite a story that we're going to unpack today. And everybody that I talk to is like, highest energy, best energy you're ever going to have on the podcast. So no pressure.
Oh, no, good. Okay.
Let's talk about getting into banking.
Yes.
How'd you get into banking?
Well, you know, at this point, I feel like I've told some of these stories a lot, so bear with me, but I'm from Sherman, Texas. Mm-hmm. I went to OU and then UT straight through to business school, and I needed a job. It's as simple as that. I had never thought about being a banker, mm-hmm. ever, but I wanted to live in New York City. I thought that would be just fabulous, a girl from Sherman. So I flew up there. And had set up some interviews because at that point, most firms were not interviewing on the UT campus in the late 70s. And one of the interviews I had was a bank. And it was the job offer. And he said, we'd love to have you come here and join us at Chemical Bank. And I said, oh, I've always wanted to be a banker. And that's how it started. And the rest of the story, which I love to tell, is I went out to a payphone.
Okay.
Right outside and called my parents in Sherman, collect, and said, I just got a job offer from Chemical Bank in New York, and I have a job. And you think about it, my dad was an eighth grade educated bulldozer officer in, you know, Dust Bowl time. And my mother graduated from high school, never been out of Texas. A lot he could have asked. Fourth daughter. And he said, well, does this mean you'll stop calling collect? And I love that story because he would always sort of diffuse stressful moments or with a little bit of humor.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never forgotten it. And it just, I thought this could be fine.
Do you remember what your offer was for?
$25,000, which was a lot of money.
Yep.
I mean, that was big dollars compared to what banks were paying in Texas.
You remember what your rent was in New York back then for like a room?
That's a great question. Well, a
couple hundred bucks.
Yeah.
It's changed just a little bit.
Yeah, it's changed a lot, a whole lot. And I was only there. I was there 2 weeks and my boss called me in.
Okay.
And I thought, he's figured out I don't know anything. And I still wasn't sure what prime rate was, but he said, well, we have this analyst program starting. You were a summer grad. So if you don't mind, we'd like for you to go to London. And I still remember I said, England? He goes, yes. London, England. And I said, yes, I can do that. And that was a moment for me because I think so many times people overthink and you just got to say yes. And even as a young woman, so I said yes. And I was in New York 2 weeks. And they moved me to London to the analyst program. And I was there 12 months.
And did you know by that point you loved banking?
I knew I loved the people.
Yeah.
And I think I've always had this grateful spirit. Like I was so thrilled to have a job and so I always overworked whoever I was with because I just wanted to make sure they didn't rethink their decision.
Yeah.
You know, but then I think I started loving banking shortly thereafter. The people. It's always the people, you know, in every firm, but they started teaching me huge mentorship. Mostly back then, it was all guys.
Okay.
And a lot of mentorship.
Okay.
A lot of tough feedback. Okay. And I loved it. You know, I think that was a real plus is that I could say, okay, that's great. Thank you. I appreciate it. I never got upset or cried. I said, okay. And I got tough feedback. So they can't give it that tough anymore.
Why do you think you can handle tough feedback?
That's a great question. I don't know. From being from Sherman, fourth daughter.
Yeah.
I'm very half full, very positive. So I kind of always assumed people wanted to help me. I always thought, we're going to end up liking each other. And I had some bosses that I know would think, how did I get her?
Yeah.
How did I get this blonde Texas cheerleader in my office? And this one story I have to tell because it's so funny. I was mugged and it was early on and New York was probably 1980. It was lunch hour and I was gone too long and a guy on the street helped me chase these two people down. We only caught one. I mean, I'm not making this up. It was just crazy. And they just, and I had $100 on me and I was just so irritated about it. And I got back to work. It sounds silly, but it's one of the best pieces of feedback I ever got as a woman.
Okay.
And my boss was named Steve Silverstein. He's no longer at the bank, and he wasn't really sure what all about me and hadn't. And I walked in, I was apologizing, left. I said, I'm so sorry I'm late. I was mugged. I would never be late for work. I'm so sorry I was late. And of course, we chased her down and then we took her to the police station. But I would never, you know, would never be late for. He goes, come in here. He put me in his office, said, let me be real clear. This isn't a debutante party. Mm. And you're not a debutante. We don't apologize in New York when we get mugged. He said, you okay? He said, you apologize too much. You look fine to me. Come in here and go back to work. And I, over the years, I'll never forget it because I think sometimes women, it's a habit, and they apologize too much.
Yep.
And after that, I thought, you're right. And I got mugged again. I didn't apologize.
All right. So you spent time in New York.
Yes.
But then you decided to come down to Fort Worth, Texas in 1990.
Yes. I was asked to come.
Okay.
So I went into my office, boss's office, many bosses, and said, you know, I'm from Texas. And he says, no shit. And I said, well, the reason I'm telling you that is I'm going to interview because I'm ready to go home. He said, go sit down.
Yeah.
We're buying a bank in Texas. So I always said they bought me a bank so I could move home.
Okay.
And that was Texas Commerce Bank. And so I'm in Dallas and it's fabulous. And at this point, I'm married with two little girls and 1990. And another boss calls me in his office, says, we'd like for you to move to Fort Worth. Because at the time, they did not have any Texas Commerce Bank run by a woman. And I said, well, I'd love to. You know, I never said no much. No. I don't remember saying no. And of course, I fell in love with Fort Worth, Texas. I loved it. Loved everything about it. Loved the people. I loved, you know, and it, I think in your career, when you can own something,
mm-hmm.
really anything, a project doesn't have to be, you know, but I kind of, most of my colleagues in Dallas didn't come see me in Fort Worth. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of got to own the bank and hire people. And it was a game changer for me. It really changed my career.
Okay. So that was 90. Remind me the year that you started again.
79.
Okay. So what do you think you knew after 11 years of being in banking? Because you started, you said you didn't know anything.
Yeah.
But 11 years later, you're now the chairman of a bank in Fort Worth, which probably meant you were young 30s.
Yeah. Yeah.
What did you know by that point that got you?
Well, still not a lot, but I hadn't even been to a board meeting. And they said, you have to run the board. I had learned that it's one all about relationships, and I was really good at that. I learned the business of the client business, the servicing business. At that point, I was in the commercial bank, and I think one of the things I've always been good at and appreciated were all the people that sometimes get ignored, the wire department, the risk department, the credit department. These are the people that taught me. And I made friends with everybody and said, okay, how does this work? And so over those years, and still today, the value of the team cannot be underestimated. Everybody adds to it. And I'll see bankers sometimes not remembering someone's name. I'm like, no. No. They are on your team. And they're just as important as your boss. And so they had all taught me, and people wanted to teach me. And I got a lot of feedback. And I'd been in Fort Worth. It was all guys. I did not have one female officer. So I thought we need to do a little something there.
Yeah.
And I went to Joe T's and hired a waitress that had just graduated from TCU. She was fabulous. So we started making a change there, but it was 2 weeks and we were going to go call on some clients. I've been there 2 weeks and I got all dressed up and I've always loved color. And I had on a very, very pink Pepto-Bismol pink suit. And I went in and, you know, you can picture it's all guys, 1990, and this young man who was an analyst type. And he goes, oh my God, what do you have on? I said, well, it's an Escada suit. Like, oh my God. And he's like, I don't care what it is. It looks like Pepto-Bismol's all over you. He said, you can't wear that. We need this community to take you seriously. It's way too pink. And then they all froze. They thought, how is she going to react? I said, fabulous feedback. I said, I live 10 minutes from here. Let me go out, put something else on, and we'll go out and make some calls. They never stopped giving me feedback. And I think that's a gift. And I think that's what people miss.
Do you think feedback is lacking in the world today?
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And some young people don't even like the word feedback. They call it constructive criticism. I'm like, well, okay, call it whatever, but you want it.
Right.
It's good and bad.
Yep.
You can get great feedback too.
Yeah.
So I think it's very important. I really do.
Well, I'm going to guess you listen to their feedback, but you didn't necessarily stop getting rid of pink suits
no,
and purple suits.
No, I didn't. I first got to meet everybody and then I brought the pink back.
So when you landed in 1990, what were you tasked to do? What was that first day or week or year on the job to do?
It was an underperforming bank.
Okay.
It was maybe one of the worst performing banks in the Texas Commerce Bank system.
Okay.
And so I needed to figure out who were the bankers that could get the business, who were the bankers that couldn't, and start really building a high-performing team. And that meant some people left. We hired new people. We met the clients in town. I don't think there was a calling effort much before that. We were, our first office, we were kind of over by the Tandy Center and we bought First City 93 second time around. And we got to move to a new building. Mm-hmm. And that was a game changer too for us. We had a new front door. and everything went into it. And I worked on the team. I hired new people, a real talented team today that I still keep in touch with.
That's awesome.
And it was ours. And I would even go stand I wanted to meet people, and I would go stand in the motor bank to greet everybody coming through. I mean, it was great fun.
Do you remember, was there a moment or maybe a series of moments where what was trending down, you remember an inflection point, you had kind of righted the ship? Was it building the team? Was it getting clients in, or just something that you remember that you kind of walked in one day and you said, okay, I think I got this?
Well, I remember that there was a gentleman, he's gone, he died. He was quite a legend at our bank. His name was Jimmy Lee. And I called him, and he was in the investment bank. I said, Jimmy, it's Elaine. I want you to come to Fort Worth. He said, and why would I want to do that? I said, well, we've got some really important people and clients down here that you need to meet. And he said, I hear you're changing things down there. I'll get on a plane tomorrow. And that's when I thought, you know, we're going to bring the best this bank has to this town. And we're never going to stop. And I think sometimes small towns are you'll see different markets not get the same attention. And that brought the attention to Fort Worth across the bank. And we started getting the best.
I love it. All right, we're going to sidebar for a second. Okay. We'll talk plenty about banking and market, but I first knew you from the rodeo.
Yes.
And you have ridden in we'll work backwards for a second. You've ridden in 950 of them. Mm-hmm. I think you're third horse, or are you fourth?
Well, it depends on what dignity we have that night. We have a mare, et cetera. I go back. Yeah.
But I'm already getting
moved up.
Okay, you moved up. And I'm getting the vibe you haven't taken no well throughout your career. You've already said you say yes, but you went in, you said, can I ride in the rodeo? Mm-hmm. Take it from there.
Well, I got here and I just love riding, and I'm from Sherman, and I went to the rodeo and fell in love with that, and went to the general manager, and his name's Bob Watt, who I adored. And I said, Mr. Watt, can I ride in this grand entry once? He goes, you could see him kind of roll his eyes and think, oh, she's that lady banker. Yeah, you can do it one time. of course, I loved it. Wanted to do it again. I said, gotta do it again. And he looked at me. He said, young lady, I'm going to tell you something. If you do one, you got to do them all. I said, that won't be a problem. And I even, they, you know, they sent me back to Dallas in 2000 to run the business. And then we moved back here. I mean, I've been back and forth so many times, but I would drive back and forth late from Dallas. I didn't want to miss. And he would, every time I would turn the corner and go backstage and in our old arena, he'd go, oh, she's still coming. And and that was probably one of my favorite journeys is the stock show.
Well, I just have a quick question. So that's 28 nights.
Yeah.
Do you just not leave town for 28 days leave town for the day and be back in town for the rodeo?
I don't leave town except for there's occasionally a Jamie Dimon meeting that trumps. Yeah, it trumps it. And I debate. And there are some people in the bank that go, Elaine, you need to go to this meeting. Okay. So occasionally that's the only reason I'll miss. Not sick or anything. It's just occasionally there might be a bank conflict.
Got it.
But no, I don't leave town. Everybody knows that. And you can't do something this much without really loving it. You can't fake something that long. And I remember when we bought one of the banks and the chairman and I met, sat down, and he said, I have to tell you how annoying it has been. Now that we're one, I'm going to tell you this, how annoying it has been seeing you ride around on that horse all the time. He said, for another bank, it's very annoying. He said, but you know, right now we're together. I'll get used to it. It was so funny.
It's iconic. It is iconic. And the next question, you know, that's coming is you don't wear the same outfit. So you have 28 of them at least.
At least. And during the year, because that would be.
That's for the rodeo.
That's the rodeo. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So where do these come from? I mean, they are, if you're listening to this, you've never been to the Fort Worth Rodeo, these are iconic Western wear.
Yeah.
Where do these come from?
The wardrobe got better, you know, over the 34 years I've done it.
I'm sure.
And I have my husband, who's fabulous, but never quite knew, like sometimes husbands don't, you know, what to get me for Christmas or, you know. And he was listening to a NPR radio program, and it was a story on Western designers. And the granddaddy of all was Nudie, N-U-D-I-E. He was special.
Okay.
And he would design for Roy Rogers. In fact, Royce and Nudie, he put the sequins and stuff on them because Roy said, look, it's the Depression. I want to make people happy, and I want them to see me all the way up to the top rafter. So... And then there was another gentleman, Manuel, and he's older and he's not designing. And this is probably 12 years ago. And there was another man that worked as a young guy, helped Nudie and worked under him and lives in Hollywood.
Okay.
And he still designs mostly rock star stuff.
Okay.
My husband pulls over the side of the road, writes his name down, calls him and says, my wife rides around in a circle.
And like a zigzag.
Serpentine ride. And would you ever make her an outfit? She loves the design of Nudie. He said, sure. Send me a pair of pants and a shirt. So got it out of my closet. And many outfits later, but I had to promise that I would never look him up, try to find his name, because he was afraid I might go buy one or two.
Yeah.
And he said, let me have this. Just, this is my deal. So I can't pick the color. Who knows what color it's going to be. So they're very special. And I think those I'll probably donate like to the Cowgirl Museum or something someday.
They're incredible.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. And then the last thing on the rodeo, which I just think is important, and you've been outspoken, is just like the culture of it.
Yeah.
How it's just impacted your life. Were you a rodeo person or a cowgirl before the rodeo? Because it kind of turned you into one.
Well, I my next door neighbor had a sort of a ranch there, and we'd go ride.
Yep.
So I enjoyed horses, riding. There was a little parade in Sherman. My dad would ride in the Grayson County Parade. So I had an affinity, but no, the Fort Worth Stock Show and Rodeo is special. It is the oldest indoor rodeo. It's 128 years old coming up. The culture is amazing.
It's the best.
And just this past year, they were doing, it was a choir, I believe it was a TC choir, singing Star Spangled Banner. And I was backstage, kind of underneath, and one of the gentlemen that's on the board looked through and could see that one of the young kids was sitting on the ground. And he put his hand through that fence and yanked him up so fast. He said, "We stand up during this."
Yep.
And that's how it just continued. It just passed down. I think the cows even stop when it's, you know, it's just the Pledge of Allegiance. And so the tradition of it, the kids, the respect.
Yep.
There was a very famous actor one night having dinner backstage.
Yeah.
This is 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And I knew, I thought, well, he'll be up front.
Yeah.
You know, and I kept looking for him as we were riding in the Grand Entry. He was rode out right in front of the clowns. I thought, oh my goodness, someone has messed up. So I get out back and we get off the horses and I asked one of the guys, I said, "What happened?" He said, "He was rude to our waitress."
Mm.
Then get to ride at the top, the front. And it just kind of says it all. I think the fun thing about it is, you know, they slowly let me in. And when they put me on the executive committee, John Justin was chairman. And he was amazing.
That's awesome.
And he told me, I was walking in to my first meeting, and he said, "We're proud of you, but I have a piece of advice. Don't say anything in these meetings for about 2 years.
Just listen."
I said, "Oh, that's going to be hard." He said, "Try. Just try." That didn't work.
You've ridden in 950. Has your horse ever bucked, or has it always been smooth?
I have never fallen off. I have never been bucked off. I've been for many years, but not always, but I don't know. It seems like the past 10, I have a Palomino that's blonde and kind of short like me. So it's been fabulous.
That's
great. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. The culture of the rodeo this year, I don't know if you were at the rodeo that night or if you stayed after they retired that bucking horse.
Oh, I was there. Oh. Yes.
I've seen more people crying in an arena for a horse that was going to pasture than you see sometimes for a human being. I've never experienced anything like that.
The best.
I was teary-eyed. I've never even heard of the horse.
Right.
Everybody around you is upset. And you're like, all right, what's it like working with Jamie Dimon?
I think when I look back on my career, the privilege of working in this organization as Jamie, being the leader, it will be right up there at the top. He's extraordinary. He's authentic. He is not a politician. He says what he believes and doesn't spin a thing.
Yep.
And I think that's so refreshing. I think he was in town, and this was many years ago, and I was having a town hall, and two tellers that work and live in East Texas took a vacation day to drive in to hear him.
Mm.
And I'll never forget that, because Jamie appeals not only to the top CEOs in the country, but all of our employees. And it's because he really cares about them. And he tells it like it is, too. And I've seen him in meetings or big, you know, receptions, criticize Democrats and Republicans in the same room, and they all walk out going, "Isn't he great?" I think it's his honesty, his vision. And at the heart of it, he is a risk manager. Every time we have, which we've had, and I've lived through a lot of them, but many bank crises, et cetera, he's not tempted to get ahead of things. He's always thinking, what's the worst case? And prepare for it. And he's taught us, the people around him, that. And I think that's why he is such a port in the storm right now, you know.
But he's never going to run for president.
No, he won't run for president. I mean, that's what he says, but every client asks him.
He gave a speech. I saw him last year at one of y'all's events in Dallas, and he said a lot, but he said something. He said, look, we have banks all over the world. We have clients all over the world. If every immigrant was given the choice in this world where they would live, it'd be the United States. Mm-hmm. And I see it every day. I walked out of there. I was never more excited about America than hearing him talk about it.
He's such a wonderful American. And I've heard him ask, Ben, he was, you know, about the presidency and that, and then, well, who you vote for? He said, let me be very clear. Whoever gets in that office, I will support. I'm a red-blooded American, and I'm so proud to be here. So he's a great guy to follow, and you want to do well when you're in his organization.
Yep. So he would ride at the front of the grand entry.
Yeah. That would be fun, wouldn't it? Get him, that,
can you
get
make
him
that
at the
happen?
Grand, can you imagine? That'd
oh
be something
gosh,
else.
Oh, my gosh. It'd be hilarious. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All right. You have spent a lot of time in wealth management.
Yes.
You run the private bank.
Yes.
You're the chairman of DFW. I wanted to just spend some time on wealth management.
Yeah.
How does that business work? Obviously, people have money. They need to manage it. But right. What does it look like from your world?
And so I cover the middle of the country, which
okay.
I love.
Okay.
And a swath in the middle. So Chicago and Minneapolis, Michigan, all the way down.
Okay.
And one thing I've learned, so wealth management, we have a place for everybody in the country that needs help with their money. And everybody needs help with their money. And that's why we have a branch in every state, and we're building 500 new branches. And we have 900,000 people visiting our branches every day.
Wow.
We believe in servicing our clientele, wherever they are.
Okay.
And it's our, I think a lot of young people are become clients because of our mobile app, right? I mean, we got to find a place to meet our clients.
Yep.
At the heart of where we help people, it starts, a lot of our part of our firm, financial, you know, education, basic accounts and saving money, et cetera. And this country is in such need of that. And so we focus on that, helping people with a bank account and understanding their money and being able to take care of it all the way up to very, very wealthy clients in this country. And I think what I have, so I was asked to go to the private bank in the mid-90s. It was Texas Commerce Bank, and we didn't have a private bank. So we were going to build us a private bank. We weren't quite sure what it was, but it was, you know, for wealthy people. And then we merged with Chase, and Chase had a private bank, and we got better at it. And then J.P. Morgan, and they were the real deal. And they had probably because J.P. Morgan himself had his own private bank, but the legacy, the history of the business. And I think what has made our business the business of helping individuals keep and grow their money and have it to do the things they want to do, have it for their kids, and then one of the hardest things that our bankers forget that I focus on a lot is helping them plan where they want it to go to.
Boom. That was my
next
question.
And that's a very tough one. And it's maybe the most important thing.
Do you have, obviously we're not going to mention names or even close to that, but like a thought or a story of things that people do really well to transition wealth?
It's unbelievable. Some of the families that I see that are so functional.
Yep.
And it starts, and then we have a lot of dysfunction.
What does functional look like? And then what are things
well,
you can see from a mile away that goes, this is going to be dysfunctional?
We all see it all the time. Dysfunctions when you see families suing each other and fighting. And sometimes it's not even always about a lot of money. It's about control.
Okay.
But it starts with communication. And what I tell all my clients
like patriarch to. Like,
yes. Like if you're the parent and you have an amount of money that you know you're going to leave your kids, or you have money and you want to start educating them on what you're going to do with your money, you have to start early. The surprise of a parent dying and finding out later where the money's going is the worst. And I don't care how much it is.
Yeah.
It's the worst. And if you've got four kids and you got three pickups, you're going to tell them before you, I am insisting you let all of them know. You get this one, you get the yellow one, you get the blue one, and you're going to get something else. That's the way it's going to be.
Yep.
So they don't fight when you're gone.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still, it's complicated. It is families. It's real people. But it's why I love it, because it's real people and it's helping people. And it's I think it's the essence of being sort of a servant's heart, you know, really trying to help people, growing old with them too. I have so many widows over the years, educating the whole family, the wives. It's not just one client and you meet their family later. We really believe in meeting the whole family. We're a team. We're not, you know, our private wealth business, we aren't paid on commission. We're not a brokerage shop. We do investments. We're amazing in the investment side, but it's the whole thing. It's the planning. It's the lending. It's, you might want to buy a piece of art. You might need a loan, Chris. I can help you with that. I mean, you know, it's all encompassing. I think that also helps us keep clients for a long time and grow with them, get to know their kids. We have many, which I think is one of the best things we do, is several programs to educate, I say kids, but, you know, 22 to 40. Sometimes I think it's easier for the children to ask and get to know a banker, someone that can talk to them about money at this, than ask their parents all the questions.
Do you have an opinion on whether a trustee should be a family member or a third party, or is it totally situational?
I think it's really important to have a co-trustee as someone who does it for a living.
Got it.
I think it is a burden to give it all to a family member because of the details, the taxing, the taxes situation, the accounting. You need a professional trustee, at least as a co-trustee, that does it for a living every day. It takes that burden off the family member.
Yeah.
And I tell a lot of clients, you can have a family member as a co-trustee and involved, that might make them feel more comfortable, but don't give them the whole burden.
Yep. Is there a loan or what's the weirdest loan you've ever made? Or so you always hear in the private bank, like they'll do anything, or not they'll do anything, but the craziest things have been done. Is there one that comes to mind? Is like, we did this one thing one time.
Yeah. Well, if we can get some security for it and liquid collateral, we'll look at probably much anything. And their personal guarantee, you know, tie them up.
Yeah.
But I do think we are more flexible and try to meet the needs that a wealthy individual might have.
Yeah.
We don't want someone to get a voicemail.
Yeah.
I'm very big on that. So.
It's one thing, like you have the client maybe that sold their business, they just sold their business, kind of first time to be wealthy or have money. They're probably out looking for a wealth manager, right. So they're probably easier to get. Then there's the more established family that's maybe had money for generations. I'm trying to ask, like, how hard is it to get that person as a client versus the person? Maybe it's not how hard, but what's the process like to move a big family over? Is that decades of relationship building, or what usually happens for somebody to make a switch?
It depends, because just like any business, I don't know that anyone is easier. You have to establish trust in a relationship. Mm. And I often see, and this is just like anything, even like a marriage, probably, but you stop taking care of your clients because you've had them a long time. So sometimes large families are open to moving because they don't know their banker that well. Mm. And I think that's a real important thing with my team and all of us, is that our clients, we stay focused on. We treat them like we're still dating.
Yeah.
And I think that's important because we'll find opportunities with, you know, large families, new people who've just sold their company. That's really fun though, because helping them with our wealth planner, you know, we have a wealth advisor, all our different, sometimes we don't even, it's not always about the money first. It's what do we want to do with this? And let's do it early so we get the tax situation right. You know, there's just a lot that goes into it, that it's not always about, give me your money today.
Right.
How can we help you? Let's get it someplace safe, earning some interest, but let's talk about your situation. And I really do love to meet the whole family.
Yeah. You kind of become intertwined.
Yeah. And I've seen it too many times where, and there is something so simple. And I'm going to give a tip on this podcast.
Let's do it.
Everybody thinks, no matter what, that if you have a joint account, you're good. That if you die, your wife can, it's a joint account. That is not the case. Mm. The account needs to be titled right. Mm. So it doesn't get caught in estate probate, et cetera. So it's joint with right of survivorship. Everybody should look at the way their accounts are titled. So if something happens, you can get to the cash to, I mean, it's just not that happy, but, you know, to take care of things.
Yeah.
And that's a mistake that's made a lot. Simple things.
Yeah. Are you sometimes shocked at the amount of wealth a family might have and the amount of sophistication they don't have?
Well, they have great sophistication, but not always, like, lawyers don't always know that, you know? So it's asking, you know, sometimes the little things get missed, which we like to take care of.
Yeah. Okay. You said, we were talking before this, you said every crisis, JP Morgan gets better. I want to just talk about the Silicon Valley Bank debacle. Yeah. What did that look? Because I think y'all bought them, right?
Well, we bought First Republic.
Oh, we bought First Republic. Okay. Yes. But what did that week look like for you?
Crazy.
Okay.
And the calls coming in, panic, like an old fashioned, you know, oh my gosh, bank run. And although this bank run today is a lot faster than standing at the door with technology. So it was just really crazy and very stressed and stressful for the clients. And it was not just our private bank, but it was commercial bank. It was, you know, anybody who had an account, and they were starting to panic that they'd lose their money, which I've always said, that's, I mean, if you think you're going to lose your money, whether it's cyber attack or anything, that's real panic. Mm-hmm. So we helped thousands of clients open accounts and help them. And I was saying we got better at, you know, like anything, when you're a big bank, you have to step aside, do a refresh, look at your systems, look at your procedures, because they, over the years, you add something all the time and suddenly you're asking a client for their signature six times. And we improved our account opening process so much. Because we started saying, why do we need this? To make sure it was faster. And then we're like, wait, we've learned a lot through this. Mm-hmm. And it was actually, you know, always something good comes out of it. But we put a lot of analysts to help us get the accounts open. And now we've decided they probably need to learn how to open an account. We may add it to their training. It was very interesting. I was here in the 80s in banking, and how many people thought, uh-oh, is this going to be a overall epic and banking crisis like we had? And it really wasn't. It was different.
It's pretty short-lived.
It was very short-lived. And I think even the regional banks, you know, yes, there's going to be some real estate that won't be renewed, and there'll be a little pain there. But I think it's much better than we all thought at the beginning.
Yeah, I remember calling, friend Colin, said, is everything okay? He's like, we're like Fort Knox. Like, okay, I'm going to go eat dinner. I skipped over this question, but I think it would be important. You've actually hired tons of people. You've seen people start as analysts and build careers. What do you see in, or what do you know about somebody when they're going to be an exceptional wealth manager in the private bank or banker? What is it that you know will they'll be successful?
Number one, you can trust them. You know, I mean, not everybody is suited for the business to be, to have a very close, intimate relationship and this to be trusted. I mean, I've forgotten half of everything I know. You know, you have to be trusted and discreet. It is the private bank for a reason.
Emphasis on it, private.
Private. And, you know, people will share a lot of things on Instagram, but they're not going to always talk about it, their money.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
So I think that, and I think the willingness and the real desire to serve, to be, there's no task too small. And please call me Sunday morning if you feel like you've had some issues in, you know, hacking in your account.
Yeah.
It's a great private banker. It's a 24-hour job.
Okay. Do you even think about crypto?
I think about it all the time.
Oh, really?
Crypto. I'm sorry. I was thinking cyber. No, I don't think about crypto.
Okay.
No.
You think about cyber, though.
I think about cyber a lot. I think it's probably the biggest threat we have because the hackers and the bad guys get smarter every day, and AI has helped them with voice, you know, mimicking, and we have to get smarter. And so we spend
a ton of money.
And this bank has to be like Fort Knox. So making sure we keep your money safe probably is the number one thing.
Why don't you think about crypto?
Well, I'm not sure what it's worth. And I don't trust it. And it's not regulated. And I grew up in a regulated industry. And I just don't think about it or trust it.
Is it even, from your view of the world, is it? It's easy to get online and think crypto's everywhere, but you obviously are working with the wealthiest families in the middle of America. Is it even a thing, really?
I think you know, some of our clients have crypto. That's fine. They've dabbled in it. I don't think anyone has all their wealth in it.
Yeah. Okay.
Or should.
Okay. So we'll tie it back to AI. Mm-hmm. The bank is probably, is there a way that you're using AI besides working on cyber? Is there other ways y'all are thinking about it?
Oh, yes. We are very focused on AI. And you know, it's amazing where it can make our jobs more efficient and help us and make things that we do. We have seen a lot of examples recently where, and we have a whole amazing group that focuses on AI. And again, you make friends with them. Mm-hmm. But it will be a benefit to our business and how we can be more efficient and quicker and help our clients.
Yep.
And not have take forever to look something up for them or find what they're looking for. And there's just a lot of great, I think, systems that are going to come out of it. We're already seeing a lot of it, but we're very focused on it and the right way. And I heard recently that AI has also found a way that it can detect if the voice has some issue with it. It might be fake. Now, it's not perfect yet, but we're going to
get it.
We're going to get it. Yep.
I want to just talk about just the banking industry as a whole. I mean, we talked about Silicon Valley Bank.
Yeah.
The banking industry is, I wouldn't say it's been locked up totally, but especially for somebody in real estate, the last 2 years, it's been kind of locked up. Regionals, there's a lot of maturities coming due. Banks aren't lending as freely, at least on real estate. What's going on? Like, when are we going to get some good news?
You know, I mentioned regulations.
Mm-hmm.
And what can I say about regulation? So they're kind of ridiculous. The continued increase in how we are regulated and our cost of capital keeps going up. And so for large banks like we are, it's extremely painful. And I think the regional banks are starting to feel some of that after last spring.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll see how this plays out, but I think at some point there has to be some kind of let up on just continued increased regulations, because then you can't do, it's going to lock everybody up to not be able to do business. It's so tough. We will be able to, because we're a very strong balance sheet, large bank, but it increases the cost to everybody. So this, I think, is an issue in the system.
Do you think there's any relief coming? I mean, can we get Jamie to go up to D.C. Ring the bell?
I think there's a lot of people, including Jamie, that are vocal about it.
Yeah.
But we'll have to see how it goes. And, of course, politics and legislation.
If you had to guess, are we going to get 3 rate cuts this year?
I don't think so.
Really? Are we going to get 1?
I do. I think 1, maybe 2. I don't think 3. That's just a lane.
Yeah, that's a lane. During an election year, do you think about elections at all and how they impact the banking industry? Or
No.
Not something to focus on
totally. I focus on the clients. Elections are going to be what they are going to be. And I think it doesn't, the market really focuses on earnings and growth, and it reacts to the Fed if they're going to cut or not. But I think I don't spend a lot of time on the elections.
Okay. We're in DFW.
Local ones I love, but yeah.
Why?
Well, all politics are local, yeah. Right? I mean, and I think here we have a fabulous mayor, and I've been very supportive of her. So
she's great.
She's great.
And we had a great one before that. We've been 2 for 2.
That's right.
Before that, honest with you, Fort Worth's been lucky.
Has great
there.
Leadership.
Let's just talk about DFW.
Yeah.
We're in like the gold mine of the world.
Unbelievable.
What does it look like from your position over the last decade, or really the last 4 or 5 years since COVID started, maybe?
I think that for so long, you could stick to one zip code in different communities, like in Dallas, one zip code. And, not anymore. The wealth is everywhere. The wealth is growing daily. It is moving in our community daily. And it's hard to keep up with. And the different areas, we may have to put a private bank office in Sherman before long. I mean, it's just moving north. Frisco, Prosper, the PGA headquarters up there in Frisco. I mean, it's quite astounding. And I think, one, it makes you think of real estate, like where should you be? So you're accessible, i.e. building 500 new branches in the country, but also where should the private bank be? So we always think, should we have an office someplace else north where the wealth is growing to be there for clients and tap into that? I have the middle of the country. So I can see the difference in the growth here, and it's good and bad because, you have to make sure you're hiring enough that you can take care of it. And that's one thing we have not stopped during COVID. We kept hiring and we're still hiring.
You keep saying the word office and branches.
Yeah.
Those are dirty words to some people, but it doesn't sound like they're dirty words to you.
I believe in coming in and culture, and it's very hard to build a culture in your bedroom.
Yeah.
But I think the office space is very important.
Yeah.
And I mentioned this to you, but I think that my bankers do not want to come back to something that's tired and looks older than they are. You have to refresh the spaces. The tired 80s office buildings have to be freshened up. They want activity. They want light. They want snacks. Got to have snacks. And they want good coffee, not just any coffee. But they enjoy, honestly, being together, and it's fun.
Yeah.
And when you make the space fun, they will come. I'm 100%, I keep seeing it.
It's hard to build a relationship with your banker through a camera.
It is so hard to build one through a camera. You have to know them. And I think Zoom has been extremely helpful with meetings where you just need to touch base on something, but New York, but I go visit my clients.
John said it on the podcast. He said Zoom's good for moving business up the chain. It's not good for creating business, selling business. Once you got a project going, you can move it through Zoom, albeit probably slower than you could in person.
Absolutely.
All right. You've had a remarkable career. What does a good year look like for you now? How do you know you've done a good job?
Well, I think we're always very, you know, we're a business. So we want to make sure we're growing clients, growing the revenue, and growing our people. And I think a good year is when we have been successful in bringing in new clients and growing the business, but where I see at this point in my career, where I see my people blossom.
Yeah.
And I think that for me now has been one of the most rewarding things is watching these young, you know, bankers suddenly become these fabulous leaders. And I just put a young man who's 30 to run our St. Louis office. Well, and he is just going to tear it up. I get a call from him every day on something he's doing. And I think energy is very addictive when you're around people that are excited about it. And Indianapolis, I have two women running Indianapolis. So much fun for me to watch it. The young men, the diversity we have, you see him come in as young analyst and just, there's a young man in our Dallas office. I just knew he'd be incredible because I will tell this story. His name is James Payne. He's just, I hope no one calls him and hires him away, but he was an analyst, summer intern, and just wanted to visit with me. And he knew I only had a few minutes because I had to go across the street to meet a client. He said, "May I walk with you?" He had researched. He saw who the client I was going to meet. So we had more time to visit and talk. And when he got up there, he said hello to the client and how impressed he was with what he had done with his business. It was so nice to meet him, and walked away. And the client said, "Hire him." So I think for me, you hear a lot about the young people. Our future's bright. They are incredible. They're inquisitive. They're entrepreneurs. They're smart. They ask why. They're like, why? And I never ask why. I'm like, okay, I'll go, you know. And I think that that's a great year, seeing that we're all the different markets, people are hitting it, you know. They're leading. They're getting their people out there. Everybody's rowing the boat.
Yep.
It's hard business. I mean, people business is hard.
It's hard.
Not everybody performs. Not, you know. And so you have to find a leader that not only has a love of it and compassionate, but is tough as nails.
Yeah.
Because you want a leader to say, there's a fire on the left side of the building. Go out now. You need someone to lead you.
Yep.
So it's fun to see that.
The last thing we'll touch on is Elaine's 8. We don't have to go through all 8 of them. I'm going to pick a couple that I like.
Okay.
Get over it.
Yeah, it's my favorite. Number 6. So we all have get over it stories daily, probably. But this one was really important to me because... And the way Elaine's 8 started is I had anything to talk about. I kept getting asked to speak because I had a title and this. And so these are sort of life stories and that has gone on and on. But Get Over It was the one that is associated with the bank. I'll tell real quick. It was JPMorgan Chase merger. And there were two of us in Dallas doing the same thing, JPMorgan and Chase. I was Chase. Mm-hmm. And that's always a little tricky. But I've been through 10 now, 11 with First Republic mergers.
Oh, really?
Yes. So I get it. And my boss called me, said, "Good news. We're having a meeting in New York and you're invited." I said, "Oh, okay." So I put on my red suit, get on the airplane, phone rings right before we take off. And it's my boss. And he said, "Where are you?" I said, "I'm on the plane." He goes, "You've been uninvited."
Oh.
And I always talk about this because, see, I had several options. And I haven't met anybody especially really men or women, but especially men that wake up in the morning wanting to deal with a mad, crying, screaming woman. So I said, not a problem. Been through a lot of mergers. I'm headed up there, but if dinner opens up, I'm happy to come. Dinner opened up and I got all of the Southeast, like Texas to Florida, because you don't fight every battle, get over it. There are reasons. It's not all about you. This wasn't about me. And just find another way in the door. And so that was when I started thinking about, you know, I need to help my bankers, like, get over it. Don't keep harping on it. We got it. You made a mistake. Move on. They made a mistake. Move on. And you want to make it easy for people to call you back. Mm-hmm. Don't be that person that go, oh, do I have to call her? Oh my God. No, you've got to be, you know, the person that, okay, I'll call her. She, you know, it's a difficult ask, but I don't mind calling her. So that was one. The personal get over it story, which is hilarious. I love a party. And I love any kind of get together party. And so I had been talking about my 50th birthday since I turned 40. I'm in the car with my husband. He's not such a party guy. And he turns to me and he says, you know, my birthday was like a couple of months. I was August. My birthday was October. He said, do you want to do anything for your 50th? I said, oh, no, nothing. Now, that's what women say. And you got to be aware of that. They lie.
It's like, you want anything for Christmas?
If you're married, they're lying to you. You better have already thought of it. So I thought, oh, surely it's a ploy. Well, it wasn't. At the last minute, he said, oh, maybe I need to throw a little party on a Monday night. My three sisters weren't invited. But I had my game face on, but I was kind of puffed up at home. And so my daughter, my second daughter, she was in high school. Maybe she was 15. And she called me on her cell phone and said, I need you up here now. I ran upstairs. I thought she had fallen. It was about 2 weeks after the party. She said, number six, you need to get over it. We messed up and we'll catch you on your 60th. So guess who planned their 60th? I did.
You did.
And my husband paid for it. But it works out. You got to figure out what is it you love, and don't expect always someone's going to make it magically happen. You got to own it. You got to figure it out. So get over it's my favorite.
Okay. I think this is a really critical point. I've never met somebody that's been through three mergers or two mergers. Certainly have never met somebody that's been through 11. What do you know about going through mergers, because you've made it through, you're 11 for 11?
So most people in general are scared of change.
Okay.
And it threatens them.
Okay.
And you see, and I would see this every single time, where people would become very territorial and not want to share sort of their business and start to try to protect it. It's the worst thing you can do in a merger.
Mm.
And I saw the team every time that would win, and the individuals that would just blossom through mergers. It's like, here's what I got. Here's my clients, and you might be better at running this than me. I'll never forget. Mm. That has been said many times. And that's a powerful statement when you're in a merger and you see the leadership of people going, look, I think this team member might be and have more knowledge and could run this, and I would be thrilled to be on the team. That gives you an edge in every merger, where they know it isn't, you're not trying to protect something, not trying to protect your job. You're trying to make it better for the whole place and wear the brand. And, you know, I always say cowboys have this great comment, you know, I ride for the brand. I clearly ride for the brand. But if you get that in your head, this is a bigger than me. This is about the firm and trying to make it better. And I think this, and I said this during one of the mergers, I think they'd be better at it, but I'd love to be on his team.
Did every merger catch you by surprise, or did you kind of, yes, you kind of know they're coming?
Yes. I kept thinking, well, we're done.
I mean, 11.
Like after we bought Texas Commerce Bank. Okay. Well, we're done. And then Manufacturers Hanover, I thought, gosh, we added one more, and they just kept coming. Yeah. And then, you know, a piece of M-Bank in Texas, and then First City, and then, and they just kept coming. And then after we Chemical Bank and Chase merged, and that's when we changed the name, Chase. And I thought, well, now
we're done.
We're done. But we weren't. And then the J.P. Morgan, they were both great names, so we kept both names. But then, of course, after that, I thought, I know we're done. I know we're done. And we bought Bank One.
Oh, yeah.
And that's when we got Jamie Dimon.
So are you done?
Well, that's I don't want to say that anymore. I think we have to keep watching this. But after, you know, First Republic is going to be a really great addition. And we've already seen. And I think what you learn, I'll end with this. Every merger, that bank was a great bank for a reason. And there are things you can learn from those bankers at that other bank. Mm. And don't ever forget it. And I always tell my bankers, listen, there were other reasons their bank was bought. It wasn't the bankers. Yep. Embrace and learn from them too.
Elaine, you lived up to every bit of expectation on energy. Thank you.
Thank you.
I hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Fort Podcast. Be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast platform or hop on over to YouTube to watch full video episodes if that's what you prefer. For more information, you can check out thefortpod.com.